This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our Sex Podcast Collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, we're live and it's October 11th, 2019. Tonight, Raymond is not live tweeting. He actually has a conflict. He's doing something else, but I just didn't want any of you who follow along with the live tweeting to think something bad happened to Raymond. He actually, it's like the fourth time in 7 years he hasn't live tweeted the show. So, but no one worry. He's safe and accounted for. He's doing a shiatsu thing. Okay. Today's subject, we're going to talk all about asexuality, what it means to be aromantic, what it means to be agender. And we've had a whole show dedicated to this, and we've talked about it briefly in other shows, but we really haven't gone into it. And I feel like these identities, although they've been around forever, as long as people have been around, they have had names and ideas behind them and talk and dialogue about them quite recently. And so lots of people still don't know kind of what they're all about. And we're going to talk about that today. If you have a question and you're listening live, you can call us at 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. If you're not live, no problem. You can still ask me a question or leave me a comment. 323-SEX-8266. 323-SEX-8266. Let me introduce my guest. Michael Paramo is a Chicanx artist and researcher born and raised on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territories of the Tonga, Hoshimin, and Payam Cowichum peoples, otherwise known as Orange County, California, the OC. They received their MA at California State University, Fullerton, and are currently a PhD student at the University of British Columbia, located on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Musqueam people. They have led workshops on asexuality and aromanticism at Princeton University and the University of California, Davis, and have presented their research on asexual history at the National Women's Studies Association Conference. They created The Asexual Journal in October 2016 and have been its lead editor and social media manager ever since. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Michael.
Hi, it's nice to be here. Thank you.
Thanks for talking to us. Like I said in the open, I feel like people still don't know a lot about asexuality. The dialogue and the visibility around it has really grown a lot in the past decade. So I want to start with some basics, some definitions, and I'm going to tell my audience these are definitions, and obviously they're not going to cover every single person, but we have to have kind of a working language for us to talk about this. So let's start with how you define asexual.
How I define asexuality and how I would say most asexual people.
Oh, yeah. Today, yeah. You can give us the most people say this. Yeah. And then this is my. Okay.
Most asexual people today, I would say, define asexuality as not experiencing sexual attraction. And attraction itself is a very complicated concept. So similarly, I guess aromanticism would also be the not experiencing romantic attraction. So when you talk, when we're talking about attraction, we're I guess opening the conversation up a little more to notice how attraction is more than just sexual attraction, or, and more than just sexuality. And I think that is a very pervasive idea in mainstream society, that a lot of people think that attraction is simply just sexual attraction. So kind of opening that conversation up a little more and showing how these identities, bring that conversation forward.
Now, I think a lot of people are under the impression that asexual means doesn't want to have sex or doesn't experience desire.
Yeah, that's actually a misconception that has been kind of, popularized in the media, and also because of the term itself as asexual, and people say like, okay, well, it's A, so it's absence of sex. But it's a little bit more complicated than that, and it has evolved over the last, since the 1990s, really, and has evolved into mostly being defined as a lack of, or not experiencing sexual attraction. Sexual desire is different. And I guess an easy way to remember this is kind of, I've heard it said that like sexual desire is kind of like just a general desire for sex, whereas sexual attraction is desire that is directed at a person. And that is kind of the differences between desire and attraction.
And for you, how do you define asexual?
I would say I define it largely in the same way. I try to leave room for, because I am doing a lot of work on, or I have done, and I am doing a lot of work on the history of asexuality and looking at how people in the 1990s defined the term. And they defined it a lot differently than how it is defined now. And maybe that is sort of, not necessarily a lot differently, but some asexual, self-identified asexual people use the term to identify a lack of sexual desire, a lack of sexual attraction, a lack of sexual feeling. So there was these kind of, there was this origins moment of people trying to understand themselves through this term. And so I'm kind of trying to leave a little space open for that. And I understand that it's very complicated to try to play that game at, or play that, you know, at once, to leave it open, but also not. And so it's kind of this complicated sort of, project that identity is itself. Identity is a very complex understanding. Everybody has their own understanding of the term. You know, if you bring the term out, doesn't mean everybody's going to conform to the same exact definition and the same exact mode or way of understanding a particular concept.
And so it traces it back as a term and as a concept to the 90s?
Online it does, but it has a history even prior to that. And the work that I've done in asexual history, I've actually looked at desirelessness in the 19th century. So there's kind of like this whole, of course they didn't use the term asexual back then, but it's kind of this whole lineage or tracing of like, experiences which may resonate with asexuality.
And what about the term? I feel like there's also these adjacent terms. Like I hear people use the word ace. I hear people use the word a-gray. What do those mean?
Ace is the umbrella term. So I guess included underneath that umbrella would be demisexuality, for example, or gray asexuality. And these are all different terms for people to feel, that they sort of encapsulate a general experience of not experiencing sexual attraction in various different ways. So it's kind of like leaving space open for others, and also for questioning people as well.
Can you define demisexuality? We're gonna use a lot of words today, so we're gonna have to stop and go, right? Can you define demisexuality, since that's one of the things that falls under it?
Yeah, it's kind of basically like attraction that is tied to emotional attraction. So I guess like kind of like a person has to form an emotional connection before any sort of, you know, on a long term or not necessarily long term. You know, of course, like you were saying, there's differences and it's hard to really define something because you feel like you're excluding people. And I don't want to do that. But it's basically like forming an emotional connection. And that may lead to some sort of sexual attraction at some point at the form of emotional or depth or connection. And that's that definition or understanding might not be how other demisexual people may understand it. So it's just this is my understanding, and that might be not or very much imperfect. So I'm just putting that out there.
But in other words, like someone doesn't experience sexual attraction sort of spontaneously just by someone passing by them in the street and they think, oh my God, that person's hot.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. You know, it's very hard for me to like imagine how asexual people navigate the world, because I've never like walked down the street and been like, oh, that person is like, I want to have sex with that person. Like, that's right. Not something that I experience. So it's kind of hard to say, oh, this isn't what they experience, because I don't really know. So it's kind of hard being on the opposite side of that and trying to understand how other people, and you know, that's something that a lot of asexual people talk about, is that understanding is sometimes very difficult because we navigate the world in such a different way.
And also it falls outside these kind of expectations and stereotypes about really how everyone is supposed to behave around romance and sex. I mean, isn't that part of a big piece of it?
Yeah, it's very much these sexual and romantic expectations that society has sort of placed on us, and we have to sort of navigate our relationships and our lives in a way that has to sort of always be mindful of these expectations.
I mean, we're constantly sort of pushing back against these various scripts that we've been given, whether it's gender or sexuality or in various ways. We have to take our first commercial break. Shout out to my amazing sponsor, The Pleasure Chest. I love you, The Pleasure Chest, and you make my show possible, so you guys should love them too. Let's take a break, and we will continue to talk about asexuality with Michael when we get back. Hey everyone, it's Kinktober. As the days get shorter and the nights get longer, our friends at the Pleasure Chest will be turning a kinky corner and diving deeper into cosplay, bondage, and a bit more BDSM. They'll be featuring some of their favorite kink folks and products on their site and social media all month long. From pup hoods and pony plugs to sexy costumes and size-inclusive lingerie, the Pleasure Chest has everything you need to kick up your kink or cosplay. Check out their selection of Halloween costumes and accessories before shopping anywhere else. All stores will have candy out and hidden boupons around the store with delicious discounts from October 30th to the 31st. You can also visit pleasurechest.com to see the schedule of their free weekly workshops and save 20% off their most popular kink, cosplay, and BDSM gear from October 25th to the 31st, online only. While you're there, if you make a purchase, use coupon code Tristan at checkout and get a free massage candle. You may know me for creating various forms of media centered around sexuality, gender, relationships, feminism, and pop culture. I'm ready to take a big risk and do something completely different, and I hope you might join me. I'm working on a family memoir focused on my own coming-of-age story woven in with my father's. It's a story about growing up, multi-generational queer experience and history, love, loss, and the meaning of home. I started it and I hope to have it completed by the end of 2019. This isn't just a new book, though. It is way outside my comfort zone, and I've been wanting to write it for years. But I've been kind of terrified to share this personal story with the public. I mean, I'm comfortable telling you about my love of butt plugs, but it feels way scarier to tell you about my family, my innermost thoughts, my mental health, and one of the most significant events in my life, the death of my father. If you want to support me in my writing, you can go to patreon.com/TristanTaramino. Thanks.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com. You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, I want to hear from you. So if you have a question or a comment about this show or any other show, or maybe you yourself identify as asexual, gray A, ace, aromantic, agender, then I would love to hear your experience or maybe your own definition of what it means to you. You can call anytime you want at 323-SEX-8266, 323-SEX-8266. I'm talking today with Michael Paramo, who is the editor and creator of The Asexual, which is an online journal. I also wondered, we did some definitions. I also wondered what some of the most common misconceptions are, do you think, about people who fall on this spectrum?
On asexuality in particular? I would say some of the most common misconceptions is that it comes from something that is sort of innately wrong with you as a person. It comes from something that maybe some sort of form of trauma that happened in your life when you were younger. There's all these ideas that there is something that must be wrong with you if you don't find, sexual attraction. If that doesn't come naturally to you, this idea that sexuality and or sexual attraction and sexual desire are things that are natural and inherent to humans, and so I think that it very much disturbs that idea, and so people try to find ways to excuse it or try to find ways to justify, how could you possibly be this way? So it very much is destabilizing that idea.
It's like the question of the why, which I think people also do with other kinds of non-normative sexuality, like kinky people, for example. A lot of people are like, why are you kinky? Or asking about themselves, why am I kinky? This sort of hunt for something had to have affected your wiring because it's not, quote unquote, traditional.
Yes, exactly. And I think in the case of asexuality, I think that comes from what I would call, or what has been called, sexology discourse. So basically, this discourse, which occurred largely in the late 19th and early 20th century, basically that established these rules of sexuality, this what was called a scientia sexualis. It was basically these different ways of understanding what was inherently normal for a human person according to their standards, according to physicians in the Western world largely, what they deemed to be normal. And these sort of ideas have largely continued to today, at least the legacies of them. And one of the most fundamental ideas is that sex is as natural as eating and sleeping and drinking and or whatever. It's something that is so essential that and that I think is where this idea has remained in society.
I mean, I think it's considered a sort of foundational idea among sex educators. It's certainly in my world that people are like, sexual pleasure is a birthright, and they'll make sort of sweeping statements like, all human beings have sex, or all human beings want to have sex, or all human beings experience sexual desire and attraction, as a kind of a universal that never gets, never really gets interrogated, I guess.
Yeah. I think, kind of just one of those things that people assume to just be because it is so normalized and it's in the fabric of society that it's something that, people just take for granted, I guess, and people just think that everybody must experience these things.
And do you feel like folks in, under the ACE spectrum also identify in the LGBTQIA kind of banner?
Yeah, I would say there has been a poll done by AVEN, the Asexual Visibility Education Network, which polled about 10,000 asexual people, I believe, online. It was an informal poll, but it largely, it came to the conclusion that most asexual people do identify underneath the LGBTQIA banner or whatever you would call it.
Right. It's another umbrella, I guess.
Yeah,
right.
The acronym or, yeah. And then also, interestingly, it also concluded that most asexual people identify as queer as well.
Oh, really? Specifically?
It was queer. It was very close, though. It was like 50-50 almost.
Oh, okay. Right.
But yeah.
And so what made you to decide to start this journal, The Asexual?
It was largely the lack of, I guess, representation out there. Also, the lack of asexual people's own voices in their writing, in their artwork, in their poetry. I didn't really see a dedicated space for that, and I wanted to see, you know, when I first started it, I didn't think it would necessarily go anywhere. I had, because I started it by myself, and I still do manage it entirely by myself, so it's something that's very much personal to me at this point. It's been over the last 3 years that I've really dedicated a lot of my time to this project, and it's been very fruitful, and I've really enjoyed it. Publishing all these, basically I publish all these different issues on different subjects and intersections, and it's very interesting to see the submissions that I receive.
Yeah, so there one theme you explored was kink and BDSM, which I think a lot of folks would associate kink and BDSM as highly sexual and sexually charged. I'm always correcting people when they think that it always involves genital contact, genital sex, because plenty of people who do BDSM aren't, it's not sexualized in any way for them. So I was really interested to kind of like hear these different voices of people who identify as both kinky and asexual. Tell me about those intersections.
Yeah, I think, like, as you were saying, there is this idea that if you are into or part of that subculture, that you are inherently like a sexual person. And I think from my understanding that it doesn't have to be so limited in that way. It doesn't have to be limited to simply sexual, activities or sexual sorts of relationships. Then that's kind of what a lot of the submissions sort of dealt with, this idea of unraveling that misconception and providing more room to expand the conversation.
I also read a really interesting piece. It was called Leaving Manhood by someone named Abraham. And that person talked about how being aromantic and asexual also challenges these foundational ideas about, in their case, masculinity. And again, like, I feel like it does intersect with all of these other identity markers, in that there are also expectations for how men, I'm going to put that in quotes, and women, putting that in quotes, behave in relationship or in the flirting process or even within sexual roles.
Yeah, very much so. I think that asexuality definitely disturbs masculinity, because masculinity is very much tied to sexual, or at least these ideas of sexual domination and these ideas of being very aggressive sexually. So it kind of challenges that idea, like, how could a man be asexual, which I think is interesting, again, I'm going to reference that poll again by Avon, but in that poll, there was actually, I think, a minority of the community that identified as a man or men also identify as asexual. So that is a very much, a part of the community that is not, or in the minority, I guess you could say, at least according to that poll. So it's very interesting to see how it's reflected, and maybe perhaps that maybe men are not feeling comfortable with identifying in that way, even if they do experience, you know, asexuality. So that's kind of interesting to see.
And where does this fit in, if at all, with the idea of a platonic relationship, like a non-sexual relationship? How would you define platonic?
I've seen platonic defined as like a friendship more, something that is more, I guess, non-sexual friendship. But in relation to asexuality, I see platonic as another form of attraction. There's a platonic attraction, you know, sexual attraction, romantic attraction, aesthetic attraction. There's all these different forms of attraction that one may find themselves resonating with, and one might find themselves experiencing, and they're trying to, I guess, express that and articulate that openly through these various ways or modes of experiencing the human experience, I guess you could say.
I mean, it goes back to the issue that we talked about at the top of the hour, which is this notion that like language can't quite capture, right? Yeah, can't quite capture all these different kinds of relationships and kinds of feelings we have within the context of relationships for other people, which may blur these lines of what is a sexual attraction, what's a romantic attraction, what's a kind of like brain to brain mind melding attraction. I also want to talk about that, but we're going to take another break. Before we go, I want to tell you guys what's happening at the Pleasure Chest in the coming weeks. As you may know, the Pleasure Chest has a whole bunch of sex ed classes. They're free. They're open to the public at different locations. And so let me tell you what's coming up. In New York City, October 16th is a squirt shop. That should be self-explanatory. October 23rd, spank someone happy. In Chicago, October 16th, butt sex basics. October 20th, blowjobs and beyond. October 23rd, role play, cosplay, and costumery. In Los Angeles, October 16th, talk dirty to me, role play, and fantasy in the bedroom. October 17th is the Ms. and MX Cruise LA Leather Contest Meet and Greet. And then the next day is the contest at the Eagle. October 23rd, Blowjobs 201. You can go to pleasurechest.com, click on events for details about all of these events and more. If you shop and buy something, you can use the code Tristan at checkout and get a free massage candle. Stay with us. More talk after the break. Hi, everyone. It's Tristan. Are you passionate about sex education and want to build your career in the field, but you're not sure how to do it? Or maybe you've begun your journey as a sex educator and you're ready to get serious, streamline your business, and get paid. My Sex Educator Bootcamp training programs, Level 1 and 2, are now available online, and they are great for sexuality professionals of all kinds. You'll learn how to develop your vision and mission and communicate them effectively. Discover tools for branding, marketing, networking, media coverage, building your audience, and more. The number one question people ask me is, Tristan, how did you get involved in sex education and how can I? Well, today's the day to find out. Go to sexeducatorbootcamp.com.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Did you forget to write the phone number down? I'm going to give it to you again. Don't worry. 323-SEX-8266, 323-SEX-8266. I'm talking today with artist and researcher Michael Paramo, who's also the creator of The Asexual, an online journal which offers art and writing and perspectives from people who identify as asexual, aromantic, agender. Michael, I read a really interesting piece on the site that I wondered if we might talk about a little bit. It's by someone named Michonne Neal. And I just wanted to quote this. Many people are familiar with romantic, emotional, and sexual attraction, but may not be familiar with sensual attraction, aesthetic attraction, as opposed to mere aesthetic appreciation, erotic attraction, and mental attraction. I've mentioned before that I'm both asexual and aromantic. I'm also, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, nadisexual, N-O-E-T-I sexual, which adds its own unique dimension to the ways I experience attraction, love, and passion. I don't experience new relationship energy, for example, and never have. Perhaps some of my long-lasting sexual openness and sensual attraction is bound up with my extremely high sex drive and my highly sensual nature. I can only be affectionate, sensual, and sexual with people that I trust, with people that I have some level of emotional intimacy with. So that's a really good piece. But I'm wondering, so they've proposed, Michonne has proposed this idea of neti or noti sexual, which sounds to me like demisexual, but do you make a distinction between those two?
When it comes to a lot of these, I guess, different differential terms, I don't tend to police the boundaries of them or care to necessarily. Like I've run this account for a while, so I've had a lot of people ask me questions about like, do you think I fit underneath this label because I am experiencing this, this, and this, and this? And for me, I don't like to be the one to say, okay, well, no, you don't because you don't experience this, or yes, you do because you do experience these things, but not these things. So like, it's very much like, do I want to enter that space, or do I want to allow the person to claim what they feel comfortable with claiming and express themselves through those labels? I don't believe in this sort of identity project in which we sort of claim our own territory, you know, claim our own space, and then police the boundaries of it. To me, it feels very like colonial or something that's very holding on to that legacy. And I kind of want to just leave it open, you know, leave it a little bit more flexible and a little bit more elastic, and let people go where they feel comfortable with going and use the labels that they feel comfortable with. And that's kind of, I guess, where I'm coming from.
And in this piece, Neal, I think, raises all of these sort of different kinds of attraction, which is really interesting. Mm-hmm. Talking about sensual attraction, aesthetic attraction, erotic attraction, and mental attraction, where they're distinguishing between sensual and erotic, which I think is interesting, which some people may just collapse into those two together. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it also dives deeper into, I think if someone said the word attraction, most people would think there's sort of one kind of attraction.
Yeah.
And that is sexual and romantic, right? You're interested in someone. You have a crush on someone. You're flirting with someone. Mm-hmm. And to break it down in these other ways is to then call attention to all the different kinds of ways that we can feel about different kinds of people in our life.
Yeah, I think that's very much true. I think people tend to see it as attraction in one sort of way, in a one-dimensional way. And attraction is so much more than that. It can be so much more complex than simply just what we see in the media, for example. I think that, for example, like sensual attraction or aesthetic attraction are these forms of at least understanding one's experience, which is very much in a way that is not talked about unless it's in conjunction with sexual or romantic attraction. So one could experience aesthetic attraction, for example, like you might think somebody is just simply beautiful as you would like a scenic or something that is like a painting almost, something that's just really beautiful to you, someone that is just really beautiful to you. But to take that away from just sex or from sexual and romantic attraction for most people would be hard to conceptualize because they are collapsed for them and they are, but for some people they're not. So for some people they do very much see them as multi-layered or not necessarily all in one.
I mean, I think like everyone who I love and all of my friends are beautiful. So I would say I have aesthetic attraction to all the people who are like closest and nearest and dearest to me. And it doesn't necessarily attach itself to romance or sex.
Yeah. And, you know, people and relationships that are based on those concepts without sex and romance are just as valid as relationships that are not. So I think, but I think that our society tends to say, like, how could you possibly have a healthy relationship, you know, without sex and romance? And these kind of ideas are very foreign, I guess, or very new to a lot of people. So it's kind of like having to introduce people to these ideas and get them used to thinking of attraction in different ways. And, you know, that's very much an ongoing process.
It reminds me of something I heard someone say on kind of a mainstream talk show once, where he was talking about his romantic partner, and he was like, "I want to have a really fulfilling sex life because if I don't have sex with my partner, then we're just roommates." which, by the way, I thought roommates was meant to be sort of disparaging and irrelevant in that sentence. But actually, yeah, when you live with someone, it can be very, very intimate.
Yeah.
So I felt like he was sort of dismissing it as, again, he was subscribing to this idea, right? That there's really only one way to have a romantic relationship. And if this is my girlfriend or my wife or my partner, then we have to be having sex.
Yeah.
But then also the notion that living together or wanting to live together with someone can only come kind of hand in hand with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard it said like that basically sexuality is seen as like the apex of attraction. It's something that is, it kind of overshadows everything else because it is seen as like the top prize or like something that must be sought after. And if you don't seek that, it's kind of like everything else is seen as lesser or as not as fulfilling or not as pleasurable or not, like there's no way that these other forms of experience could ever match sexual experience, for example. And that idea is very much very pervasive, I would say, still.
Well, this whole notion of the sexless marriage, right? When people tell you narratives about the sexless marriage, it's horrible for them, right? It's something where they feel like their needs are not getting met, and it's meant to mark that relationship as like dysfunctional or not healthy, for lack of better words. Someone was just talking to me about this the other day. They were like, when I got divorced in whatever year I got divorced, right? But for 6 years leading up to that, my marriage was sexless and it was awful. And I was thinking, so was every aspect of it awful? Like is that possible? You know what I mean? Because you're like raising kids together, you're socializing together, you're building a home together, you're doing all this other stuff. Is it really all awful, or is it just that sex is not in the equation? And I feel like, you know, the entire sort of relationship self-help movement or industry or industrial complex has been built on the quandary of the sexless marriage. Like if we were to normalize the sexless marriage, then what would therapists do?
Yeah, it's very much tied to like this notion of being dysfunctional, that if you don't experience like sex in marriage, for example, that your marriage is flawed or it's
or a failure.
Yeah, or a failure. And that you are failure also for not receiving that, or not even like, for example, if you don't even want to receive that, you're still deemed to be a failure. You're still deemed to be broken in some way. So it's kind of like, this idea is very much, I would say, very toxic to society, because it creates these spaces in which people feel obligated and feel like they're failing when they're not, like, because they're not meeting a certain expectation. And that expectation is simply something that has been popularized and so it pervades. It's something that is enforced constantly through, institutional structures and the media, for example. And we also police ourselves a lot of times by it, because we have internalized these ideas, which only propels them further. So
it reminds me of when I was doing research for my book about open relationships. I talked to a number of couples who opened their relationship as a result of one of them coming out as queer or bi. And people used to ask me all the time, like, why did they stay together? Like, if one of them wants to explore people of other genders, like, why wouldn't they just get divorced, or why wouldn't they just split up? And it was clear from the couples that I talked to that they had these deep, deep connections and didn't want to sort of give that up just because there was a sort of evolution or change in their partner, and they then wanted to explore other things with people who weren't the gender of their current partner. And people were like, I just can't even imagine that. Yet I talked to plenty of satisfied, happy people in these kinds of relationships where the sexual part waned, and then but the relationship stayed intact.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think it comes from this idea that a relationship has to be a certain way. You know, like, there's this idea in society that all relationships that are healthy and successful have to conform to a certain model, and anything outside of that model is not doing it right, or the person is not living a fulfilling life because they're not conforming to these expectations. And that's very much a problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because some of those same stigmas attached to non-monogamy are about kind of how you're supposed to behave in a relationship. In this case, you're only supposed to have sexual feelings and sexual behavior with one person. And so your acknowledgement that you have sexual attraction to other people and then acting on that sexual attraction sort of challenges that particular system. And so some of the stigma, I think, faced by non-monogamous people, it sounds parallel to folks who may be on the ace spectrum. And then, of course, I also want to acknowledge that ace people could also be non-monogamous. So one does not exclude the other. Okay, coming up, I want to talk about your latest project and a couple other things. But first, we are going to take another commercial break, our final commercial break. Stay with us, everyone. Hey everyone, it's Kinktober. As the days get shorter and the nights get longer, our friends at the Pleasure Chest will be turning a kinky corner and diving deeper into cosplay, bondage, and a bit more BDSM. They'll be featuring some of their favorite kink folks and products on their site and social media all month long. From pup hoods and pony plugs to sexy costumes and size-inclusive lingerie, the Pleasure Chest has everything you need to kick up your kink or cosplay. Check out their selection of Halloween costumes and accessories before shopping anywhere else. All stores will have candy out and hidden boupons around the store with delicious discounts from October 30th to the 31st. You can also visit pleasurechest.com to see the schedule of their free weekly workshops and save 20% off their most popular kink, cosplay, and BDSM gear from October 25th to the 31st, online only. While you're there, if you make a purchase, use coupon code Tristan at checkout and get a free massage candle.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. As Cooper just said, yes, please email me with your questions and your comments. We have a show coming up next week where I just want to give you a little preview where I ask the question of my listeners, what if there was a perfect world, what would you, as a survivor of sexual harassment, coercion, abuse, violence, what would you want? What does your justice look like? I've already gotten some amazing calls on the call line about this, and I'm going to share them in a future episode. That number, if you want to join this, is 323-SEX-8266, 323-SEX-8266. And obviously, you don't have to give your name. And if you call and want to tell your story but don't want your voice on the air, just tell me that at the beginning, and I will transcribe the message. Okay, so I'm talking today with Michael Paramo about asexuality and about the umbrella of asexuality, aromanticism, agender people. You have a project that you're working on now that I want to tell folks about. It's a book called Ending the Pursuit, Asexuality, Aromanticism, and Agender Identity. So tell me about the book and also how listeners can support it.
Yeah, it's tentatively titled that for now. It is a book project in process. You can support it by going to unbound.com, which is an independent crowdfunded publisher where people pledge support for books, and you get your name in the book if you pledge support, and it funds. And it's kind of this non-traditional, I guess, way of publishing books. And so far, the project is almost 50% funded. So,
oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
But a long way to go. People, get on it.
Yeah. But basically, the book, I thought a lot about what to possibly title it, and that's why it is still tentatively titled that. But basically, I was trying to bridge these ideas of asexuality, aromanticism, agender identity as all kind of disturbing these sort of colonial or Western projects of the gender binary, for example, of romantic expectations, of sexual expectations, and how these identities sort of pull away from that and disturb these sort of ideas of that have been normalized in our society. So that's kind of what this project will be dealing with. It will be sort of a collection of essays that talks about these different identities and experiences.
And so is it like Kickstarter or Indiegogo, where people can pledge at certain levels and get things?
Yeah, there are different pledge levels that you can choose. There's a digital book, for example, or you can get the physical book. Or you can get a cover art. So there's like different levels that cost a little bit more or a little less. But no matter which level you pledge at, you still get your name in the book if you do support. So that is, I guess, an added bonus that comes with your copy of the book. You also get your name in the book if it funds. So,
and
yeah.
We have you're giving us a special, because I love my listeners. You know, I love to give you a code and I love to save you money. If they use the promo code SEXOUTLOUD, all one word, they get 10% of their pledge, off their pledge, right?
Yeah, correct.
SEXOUTLOUD, all one word, people. So where do you see agender identity fitting into all of this? I mean, it's clear that agender identity disrupts the binary and questions and challenges all these preconceived notions about gender. But I'm wondering if you distinguish agender or where it falls for you in terms of trans folks, gender nonconforming people, non-binary people, genderqueer, gender fluid. As a category, like, is there some distinction
Yes, I do believe there is. A gender identity is basically, I would say, a segment or a part of a larger field of sexuality. So it's not necessarily the same as non-binary identity, at least from the knowledge that I have, that it is, I guess if you wanted to imagine sexuality as a field of, or gender, I mean, as a field of experiences, like I've seen a diagram, I guess, floating around the internet that kind of says, like, one corner is man, one corner is woman, one corner is non-binary, one corner is agender identity. I don't necessarily particularly imagine it or subscribe to that necessarily, but that may be one perspective of perceiving it or imagining these, I guess, this concept. But how I guess just to put it more simply, it would basically just be not experiencing gender or having no gender identity. And that's kind of how I think of it, even though I have seen these different conceptions or ideas floating around the internet. So
instead of feeling like your gender is a combination of what we think of as man and woman, or is on a spectrum in somewhere between the two ends of man and woman, you feel like you're nowhere in the spectrum.
Yeah, I mean,
or you're outside of it.
Basically, yeah, I would say that there's a whole problem in itself with man and woman, you know, so that's the whole issue, is that that is tied to colonial origin, that is tied to this idea that there is, you know, a binary that we are even conforming our thought processes around, and that's kind of a problem with, you know, indigenous communities for many, all across the world had different conceptualizations of gender. And to say that there's only man and woman and therefore we are all responding to that binary is itself a problem. So that's why I'm kind of, I never really, or don't want to necessarily say something that is so definitive, because in doing so, I am in itself upholding that structure. So I kind of want to, you know, and it's very complicated to have to navigate that. But yeah.
Okay. Well, let's tell folks where they can find you. The journal is at theasexual.com. And if they want to support the book, they go to unbound.com. How can people find you on social media?
You can find me on Twitter at Asexual Journal, and then also at MX Paramo, so P-A-R-A-M-O. And those are basically my two, you know, Twitter handles, I guess. I'm not really on other social media very actively.
Okay, great. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on the show and for talking through this stuff with me.
Thank you so much for having me.
I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, senior producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, A-Rod, my engineer, everyone at Voice America. I want to remind you where I'll be live and in person coming up October 12th, which is tomorrow, Saturday. I'm going to be presenting at the Sexual Health Alliance Presents Monogamish with Dr. Elizabeth Sheff, Dr. David Lay, and me, talking about all kinds of issues related to non-monogamy. So you can still register at the door, and you can go to my social media, or you can simply search Sexual Health Alliance Monogamish Los Angeles, and you will find info about that. On October 18th, I am the MC for the Ms. and MX Cruise Leather Contest in Los Angeles. Very fun. And November 2nd to the 9th, Swing Set Takes Desire at the Desire Resort in Cancun. There are only 4 spots left, 4 spots from being sold out. So if you are interested, you need to go to swingsetdesire.com like ASAP. Okay, people? Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, for another edition of the show. It's kind of a special show. First, I have a fantastic guest, Nicoletta Heidegger, who is the co-host and co-creator of the podcast Sluts and Scholars. And she and I recorded this live at Podcast Movement, the conference in Orlando. We're going to talk about a wide range of things, anywhere from survivor justice to cancel culture, to pedophilia. We cover a lot of ground. But what's most exciting is it's my 350th episode. Cue the, you know, party sounds. Let's all clap for that. So I'm celebrating 350 episodes of Sex Out Loud, 7 years. It's really exciting. I hope you'll join me, or I hope you'll tell a friend. Until then, please catch me on social media across all platforms at Tristan Taramino. The show is on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio, and take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.